to the Developmental Podcast, and welcome back to the NXT Roundtable, the weekly show where we summarise the weekly news in the world of wrestling and this week's NXT. No Michael Farrow once again, but I am, as always, joined by Innes McVeigh. Innes, how are you?
I'm okay, you know, I'm quite still shocked and upset by the opening events of this week's NXT, but you know, I think we'll get through it. This is going to be a very emotional episode where we work through this very hard ordeal.
Of all the victims this year in wrestling, we are the biggest victims.
Oh, God.
Yes, we will get onto that probably in about half an hour. We've got NXT TakeOver to discuss and the weekly news to cover. But first, I want to share some positivity on this podcast.
For once.
I got a Domino's yesterday.
Oh, right, okay. How was that?
So I'm 100 days into this diet.
Mm-hmm.
I've had one or two cheat days throughout, hell, keep it normal, and you know, I've stuck to it pretty strict, but let myself go over certain things ever so slightly, so that it, you know, it stays consistent. Mm. And Chelsea was like, "Oh, I've been paid. Do you want a Domino's?" And I was like, "Are they doing the delight pizzas?" And she was like, "No, I saw these online. They're like Domino's, like less than 500 special pizzas.
Okay,
like 500 calories, not pound."
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, I'll do a create your own. I'll go medium. I've started doing this when I get a pizza ordered in. I used to always just get the biggest size.
Yeah.
And then I realised, like, I've never finished it.
See, my problem with it is you can't get pan in any size other than the biggest. And because pan's the best base...
Thin crust.
What's wrong with you? Why would... No, the best part of the pizza is the lovely breadiness of it.
Nah, I like it nice and crunchy. You know that thin... Oh.
But anyway,
so I got chicken breast, not my usual topping, but I figured healthiest of them all. And then I got peppers and onions, because healthy, veg. But I got it with the reduced fat cheese that they do.
Right.
And I expected it to come, and I was, one, going to be annoyed that it was too small, because I'm used to getting the larger size. And I thought the reduced fat cheese was going to taste like shit. I think they have to use actual cheese for the reduced fat one.
Right.
Because it was really good. Like, okay. it was better than any Domino's I've had before. Like, I'm usually a bit like, since Domino's stopped doing the double decadence, you know, the one where it had, like, a cheese sauce in between two... Yeah. Since they stopped doing that for some, whatever reason, they've just been a bit shit, especially since lockdown. But, yeah, it was really good. I think, it being smaller meant that the slices were smaller, which suited the thin and crispy, because it meant that it wasn't too floppy.
Mm.
But it just tasted like actual cheese. It was, and it stayed within my diet. It was great.
Your first problem was going to Domino's and not the superior chain pizza brand, Pizza Hut.
Ah, Pizza Hut was already closed.
I like
the seasoning on the crust of Pizza Hut. They put like that garlicky, but that's nice. But I don't like the actual cheese and the sauce that Pizza Hut use. It's not great.
They're all shit, let's be honest. All chain.
I mean,
pizza,
I was going to say,
shit.
One of our friends, Gavin, said this, and I completely agree. Mm. If you're getting a takeaway, a pizza is a waste of a takeaway.
Right, okay, how?
Like if your missus, your man, your parents, or just you go, right, I'm going to get a takeaway as a treat.
Mm-hmm.
A pizza's like the worst option.
Right.
Because you can just cook a pizza piss easy in the oven.
But it's not the same.
It's not the same, but it's close. It's a lot closer than, like, oh, I'm just going to get a microwaved korma. Like, that's not the same. The worst one, though, is people who just get a chippy, and they get, like, oh, I got a burger and chips. Why did you order a burger and... Like, fuck off.
No, but, like, fish and chips are my takeaway.
Yeah, fish and chips is fine, because...
No, but fish and chips you can just make out of fish and chips in the freezer.
It's not the same.
Oh, I don't know.
Because I don't have a deep fat fryer, because I don't want my house to burn down. But unless you have a deep fat fryer, you can't get that same crunchiness on the fish. But it's probably, like, excluding Mexican, because I really like Mexican, but there's not a lot of them.
No.
Because getting, like, quesadillas or enchiladas or soft-shell tacos, it doesn't feel like a takeaway, which is nice, but I think it probably goes Chinese, Indian.
Chinese at your bottom? What?
No, this is top.
All right, go, okay, good.
Chinese, that, Indian, good, 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 then pizza. Fine. Like, okay. I like an Indian. No,
Chinese before Indian, what?
There's more from a Chinese that you can get and have, like, at the once. I feel like an Indian, you can have to get, like, a meal, and that's kind of your thing. Like, you get your curry, you maybe get a naan.
Right, okay,
and
fair.
Maybe pop a dum. So it's a lot of carbs. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, with a Chinese, I can get my beef and black bean. Right. I can get some crispy wontons. You don't get rice, because, like, what's the fucking point? You get chicken noodle soup or chicken sweet corn soup. Then you get the free wings that you never actually eat, but it's nice to have them.
Yeah.
Prawn crackers are overhyped.
Yeah, overhyped. They're not very good. And I say that as someone who likes boring plain food.
It's more that, like, I used to like them to dip in, like, the sauce. But I'd rather just, like, you know, cross cultures here. I'd rather have a naan bread.
This wrestling podcast is going really well. We should just make a food podcast. Fuck it.
I was going to say we should make the Food Network, but that is a thing. Definitely a
and
thing.
Also, people would hate me if they heard my food opinions. Literally want to murder me.
It's so annoying that we don't have a friend anymore that's on a radio show. 'Cause can you imagine the content we could get? We have a friend whose preferred pasta topping is salt. And instead, all I see on Facebook is not even my relatives of people I know, or like relatives of my non-actual family, being like, British citizens get paid a maximum of £158 a month as their pension, while over in Germany it is £600. Did we not win the war? Meanwhile, a family of illegal aliens and immigrant ethnics can get up to £26,000 a year. Sheer, if you are brave enough to say that this is a disgrace.
Are you reading that word for word?
I've looked at a lot recently. It keeps popping up, the one post, and it's always elderly relatives. In fact, they despise me saying elderly. Older relatives. Like, we're not talking, like, we're not
boomers.
Talking 80. Yeah. Like, actual boomers as opposed to people you say. But, and then I saw someone comment, what Germany pay their pension has literally nothing to do with us. Like, it's not like we went, right, we need Germany to pay this. But, a fucking racist elderly people on Facebook. That's what we like.
Become?
Well, no, there's a reason I'm talking about racism, because we're gonna segue into the news.
Okay.
The wrestling news for this week.
I can't wait to see how this segue links. This is going to be the best or worst segue you've ever done.
Monday Night Raw's been facing some racism recently, but more so in the form of the Ku Klux Klan.
Okay, well done. Well done.
Who found their way into the audience of the Thunderdome, or as I have branded it here, the Thunderdome. basically, this is a Zoom call, audio-less, visual LED screens that have been used to simulate crowds while having no crowds. But we can't have nice things.
I don't know how they haven't, like, vetted it to stop this shit, or have people on a delay to stop this shit. Like, surely.
See, a delay would be, imagine, like, big spot, 2 minutes later, the headlock's on, yeah. No. So, what, we've had several Chris Benoit, because people think they're hilarious.
Oh, cool. Absolutely.
We had Fire Velveteen Dream. We had Sonya's Kidnapper. More about that later. We had the Ku Klux Klan. We've had a literal video of a murder.
I saw that. It's great. However... We have had some good ones, like someone put a Pikachu plushie on theirs, and
Super
someone
Mario.
Put their dog in the camera, and Super Mario. So there is some light in the darkness. Not much, but there is some.
I saw somebody, and I enjoyed this. They should just get people to submit, like, a select amount of people for each show, like they're doing. But, like, a couple of 15 to 20 second clips of them cheering or clapping, or reacting.
Right.
And just loop that.
Right.
Yeah. not to play over, don't have people live in the audience.
Just constantly loop it.
Just different, like, you can probably get about, like, 10 minutes worth of unique reactions and just alternate them.
I feel like you'd end up with, like, the audience you get in WWE games, though, where it's just all the audience going, hey, woo, and it's terrible.
Wii Sports Resort on the side. It's annoying because it's not even WWE's fault.
Hang on, why don't they do that? Just CGI in the crowd from the 2K games. That'd be great. Just have them hold
not
up
even
random
WWE.
Signs.
Not even WWE want to acknowledge that 2K20 exists.
No, they don't want to acknowledge fucking Battlegrounds exists either. Christ.
But to give the Thunderdome and Raw some credit, it is working. Mm-hmm. Raw was back up at over 2 million for the first time since April. All it took was a pretty strong SummerSlam showing with some big dog returns and Keith Lee. But they got there. And the least said about Keith Lee's debut, the better.
I don't think it's as bad as people make it out to be, but it's...
No. His Twitter hasn't been great.
No, not really.
So Keith Lee debuted against Orton. Big match.
Yeah, to be fair, like, debuting on your first night against the guy who was in the main event match last night.
Yeah.
I think that's...
He lost by DQ. He then tried to say on Twitter it was a no contest. At which point people linked him to the WWE.com article that said, Randy Orton defeats Keith Lee by DQ. And then basically his gear was like gym shorts.
Yeah, see, it looked weird from the front. It looked almost like a skirt from the front for some
reason. Like cycling shorts.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know what that's all about.
And they changed his music. Mm-hmm. And he said, let me focus on that. It's not my decision, but I'm going to try and get that sorted. But just... give me some time. Which, at the start, was like, oh, he's being transparent. And then it started to get a bit Seth Rollins, where anytime someone criticised something about the debut, he quote-tweeted them.
Right, okay.
Yeah, being like... But it wasn't in the Seth way, like, I make more money than you. Ha, right. Ha, ha. It was kind of like, yo, chill.
Fair.
But Keith Lee, to segue on from Keith Lee... he made it into the top 20 of the PWI 500.
I've not actually looked at the list. I'm curious.
He was, I have the least important list in pro wrestling right here. Because I've never fully actually understood the criteria, but I believe this is based entirely off of, like, title reigns, win-loss records, stuff like main event, so it's not the best wrestlers.
Yeah,
it's
they justify kayfabe. It as kayfabe success. So how well you've progressed over the last year in terms of kayfabe. So for example, Keith Lee but at the start of when the PWI last year happened was just a guy like mid card on NXT,
barely on NXT.
Exactly, yeah. And for a year on now, he has won the North American title, won the NXT title, lost the NXT title, and is now on Raw. So in terms of that, the progression of kayfabe success would lead them to be quite high on the list.
He is number 11. Mm. So in reverse order, number 25.
I hope we're not
Walter.
Going through the full list from 500.
No, yeah, from 500. No, we'll do top 25. Cool. We got Volter. Obviously has held the NXT title, UK title for a while. Main event of the last takeover.
Probably would be higher if not before that. For the being. MIA the last
no
five
shows.
Months.
Yeah. The former four-time Triple Crown Heavyweight Champion of All Japan Pro Wrestling, Kento Miyahara, is number 24. Do you like how quickly I googled who the fuck
well
he was?
Well done. I was very impressed.
He's the only one in the top 25 that I don't know who they are because I don't watch All Japan. Number 23, Aleister Black.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Has a really big win-loss record, I believe. For a while, it was like up in the 85%.
Yeah,
so.
he's been undefeated for ages. I think he's only lost a couple of times.
Number 22, MJF.
Fair.
Who we will come back to when we talk about the current all-out card. Number 21, just don't let him decide who wrestles for your company. It's Will Ospreay.
Yeah.
I miss him. I miss him. at number 20, it's the MLW reigning World Heavyweight Champion, Jacob Fatu.
All right, okay.
Obviously still part of the Contra unit, with like Simon Gotch and others. Number 19, Braun Strowman.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. He's had the big program 18. Over the last couple of months.
Yeah, he has annoyingly beaten Goldberg.
don't remind me.
Number 18, current ROH World Champion, Rush.
Fine,
he's
I
a
guess.
World Champion.
I suppose the problem with PWI is they do list promotions in terms of like popularity. So really, like, I'd say MJF should be higher than Rush, but it's more than like in terms of like the status of Ring of Honor versus the status of AEW. So.
Well, and MJF hasn't had a title yet.
True, this is true.
I mean, he is... We'll come back to it all out, but he's definitely
But he's winning.
Number 17, weird one, Kota Ibushi, I suppose, tag champs.
Yeah,
he won the G1, didn't he, actually?
Was that last year? No, he didn't win the G1. Did he? Hang on. Oh, no. Yes, he did, because he challenged Okada night one.
Yes, I lost. Yes. Bray Wyatt at 16.
I'm surprised he's that low.
Encapsulating the Fiend. I assume the loss to the Fiend and the fact that he was without the title for a while has hurt him.
Is the Fiend a separate entity on this list?
But that would have been great.
I was so excited for that possibility.
Now, I'm going to have to check this one, because I didn't know if he still is. Yes, he is. Okay, number 16, is it? 15 is Nick Aldis.
Okay, yeah, he's NWA.
The NWA World's Heavyweight Champion. You know, that shithole company exists.
poor NWA.
Number 14, it's the Big Dog, which is similar to Volter, probably harmed by how long he's been off screen.
And he's also such a major character that you kind of expect that.
Yeah. Number 13 is Kenny Omega. Tag champs for a while.
Tag champ for so long, yeah.
And technically, is he still Triple A mega world champion?
Triple A's not running right now, as far as I know.
Yes. 12 is Brock Lesnar.
Fine. Okay. Yeah, I guess.
11, as we said, Keith Lee. Yep. Right. Top 10 is made up of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 NXT / WWE superstars, mainly WWE, and then 1, 2 AEW, and 2 New Japan.
Okay.
Something like that, yeah. So, number 10, AJ Styles.
Fair.
Yep. Number 9, Kofi Kingston, surprisingly.
Really?
Yeah.
I suppose, probably because I think he was number 1 or number 2 last year. So his position kind of retains with that.
At 8 is Seth Rollins.
Fine. Okay. Yeah.
7, as I DM'd you before, this is Cody Rhodes. God, he owns his booker a lot of credit, doesn't he? Ah, yeah, that's him, isn't it? Number 6, it's Kazuchika Okada.
Fine. Okay. Okada's always high in that list.
But he's not as high as former IWGP and Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion Tetsuya Naito, who's number 5.
Okay, yeah, won the title rest of him. Fine.
No evil on this list, I guess, because of when it was. Number 4 is Big Drew McIntyre.
Yes. That's justified, to be fair.
Yeah. Who is then pipped by Le Champion Chris Jericho.
Fine. Yeah, he's done a lot last year.
Now, this is the interesting one.
Okay.
So, number 1 is Jon Moxley.
Fair.
As has been widely reported. Number 2 is Adam Cole.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Adam Cole spent more of the year as champion, though.
Yes.
But I suppose he has lost it. So, it's interesting.
I think that's more so Jon Moxley's higher because that's him just coming off WWE. And he's gone from mid-card WWE to up to the main event of AEW.
True, up to main event.
Whereas Cole's always pretty much been main event. So that rise will probably justify it.
It's an interesting one. But,
exactly.
Women have been involved in this year's list. Kylie Rae, number 78. Tessa Blanchard, 83. I can't see the full list because I'm not paying them money. but, yeah, it makes for an interesting list and means the internet always has a breakdown. They're like, Jon Moxley's not the best wrestler. There's not even Dan Maloney on that list.
You have to consistently explain to people that PWI is kayfabe and just mostly bullshit. but
it's almost like the majority of wrestling fans have autism.
Who would think that? No, never. Wrestling for that. Wrestling fans are highly intelligent individuals.
Exactly. It's a shame they can't work out how a shower hose works. I don't even mean to have a shower. They can just tie it around their neck. So, SummerSlam saw Sonya Deville defeated by Mandy Rose in what was formerly a hair versus hair match, but ended up as a no disqualification, loser must leave the WWE match.
Yes.
Which Sonya won, and it's been reported by many of the reputable sources. Mandy won, sorry. That Sonya is done with wrestling, that basically the whole getting kidnapped nearly and held hostage by a autistic fan has scared her out of the business.
I don't know.
Work?
Yeah. Question mark? I don't think. Because the thing I initially saw, the reason they changed the match, is apparently because Sonya's lawyers didn't want her going to court bald. And like,
oh really?
Her, like a, because obviously the look of that, obviously that should roughly be a thing. But let's be honest, it would have been a contributing factor.
I suppose yeah, because she will be going to court and stuff. Yeah.
So because she had a pre-trial thing, I think about 2 or 3 days before SummerSlam.
Yeah.
But, they changed it to hair versus hair, A, to give her a break, and B, so that the court case or anything wouldn't be affected like that way. But, I mean, if it is her not wrestling, that's a shame, because she is, I think she had a lot of potential, and she never really got to show that properly.
Yeah.
But I don't think it is. I think she will be back in the next couple of months.
Yes. I can see them doing something that once this is dealt with, and she's had some time off to go and spend with her family and, you know, deal with any trauma that she's obviously naturally going to have, that they might do something where she costs Otis his cash in
to get back at Mandy. Because Otis,
you know, when Otis saw Roman lay out everyone and leave, he didn't go, ah, this is the opportunity.
Is Otis on the PWI? Sorry, I've just had a thought.
Not in the top 25, but
I'm curious. I imagine he'd be fairly
Otis,
high up.
Otis PWI 500.
It's
number 69.
There you go. That works.
Six fucking 69.
Of course he is. Fuck's sake.
I think yes. So I've got a lovely Reddit acquired top 500. I thought that said Fandango 34. It's Bandido. I'm just trying to see if there's any... I'm just scrolling through this, obviously not going to go through the whole list. I'm trying to see if there's Otis 69. Karen Noir, number 72.
Fair enough. He's quite a big progression until...
Marty Scurll, 87, which is about 80 years older than the girls he goes for. Velveteen Dream, 90, which is 90 years older than the boys he goes for.
But that was Cross, zero. I don't think that's how that
he's that much works. Of a pedophile.
If you said 80, maybe that joke could work, but I feel like he isn't fucking fetuses. We don't know. Is Velveteen fucking... We don't know.
Jordan Devlin, Timothy Thatcher, Shorty G's on... Eddie Dennis is on.
Yes! 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 Oh, my favourite. Absolutely brilliant.
I'm trying to... Josh Alexander, Isaiah Scott, Mara Fuji, ACH is 208, despite having like 5 matches this year.
Sure. He won that tourney, so fine.
Was that not like 5 years ago?
That was only a year ago. That was only like...
Someone called
year.
Dan the Dad is number 500.
Okay. Some American Dan indie, probably.
Tyler Breeze is 483.
Oh, poor Michael.
That'll go up now that he's won the title. Grado is 454, despite having, what, 2 matches?
Yeah.
Connor Mills is 446. Connor Mills is above Tyler Breeze.
Sure.
Oh my god. Fuck it. So there's Trip Cassidy and Gary J, and I thought it said Gary Cassidy in the Scottish Wrestling.
That would be an interesting placement. Better than Tyler Breeze. Oh, but... Yeah.
one person not going to be on the PWI top 500 anytime soon is Bob Armstrong, because he has sadly passed away. That's a segue.
What a segue, Jesus Christ. You may have almost said he's not going to be on the thing because he's fucking dead. That was how casual that announcement was.
He passed away at the ripe old age of 80 yesterday. Of course, best remembered for his early ring career in sort of the NWA scene, including famous matches in Florida against Jack Briscoe and the such, and least famously remembered for ruining TNA. And if you want to hear about him ruining TNA and me threatening to kill him, which has aged really badly, check out Retrona, the weekly show where me and my colleague Michael Farah sequentially study the rise and fall of TNA Impact on Spike TV, taking us from late 2005 to late 2014 every Tuesday around 6 p.m. here on the Developmental Podcast.
25 minutes, like... a record for that advertisement?
Yeah, I think so.
Good, well done.
Obviously, we would like to pass on our condolences to... I went to see BT Gunn because I was thinking of BG James, to Road Dogg and the rest of the family of Bullet Bob Armstrong, who will be sadly missed. Someone who won't be sadly missed is Adam Page, who has been kicked out of the Elite for being a drunk and not a team player.
Oh, no.
This happened yesterday on AEW following a 8-person tag, their version of the WWE 6-man tag main event.
Okay.
Looks like they are building to the eventual split between him and Omega, because they have a match at All Out against the Mammoth, against the team of.
It's the Revival. Chris. I think.
FDR, I have I not think. Copied it. Possibly that's what.
Because it looked like it was against Jericho. As far as I was looking into it, I only looked at it briefly this morning, but as far as I saw, it was a gauntlet match, and I think FTR won it. So I think it's FTR versus Omega.
Yes, it is. And I would assume that is where we will get the... what everyone thought for a while was going to be the Omega heel turn, but is looking like it's going to be the... either the full Elite turning heel,
or you could do a full Page. Just Omega himself turning heel, but Page being kicked out of the Elite and still being face.
Yeah, because people want to cheer Page in these alcoholic ways, which is interesting.
Shock horror! Americans want to cheer an alcoholic. Who would have thought? Says the Scottish person. But...
yeah, I was gonna say. we have the card here for All Out.
All right.
Which obviously is next Saturday, the 5th.
Yes, because Payback's this Sunday. Oh, yeah, shit, yes. Payback's this Sunday. Fuck. Oh, no.
What, as in 2 days' time?
Yes.
Fuck me.
So let's fill out the card for that. God, this is going to be a fucking long podcast.
Why does Saturday the 5th ring like I've got something on? Because I don't. Is it my next day off? Because that would be a nice coincidence. Saturday, August, September 5th. This is fun for the audio listeners. I am working 4 till 1 a.m. So I come home in time for All Out. So that's something. But yes, the card here. John Moxley versus MJF with Wardlow. Singles match for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. Moxley is banned from using the Paradigm Shift. Basically a stipulation stolen right out of Randy Orton's playbook by MJF. Was it Edge was banned from using the spear or something like that?
Randy was banned from using the RKO.
Randy was banned from using the RKO?
Yeah, I think that was it.
Something like that. Chris Jericho versus Orange Cassidy in a Mimosa Mayhem match.
Yes.
Match can be won by pinfall, submission, or throwing your opponent into a tank of mimosa.
Sure.
We are not sports entertainment. We are a wrestling product.
Wrestling company. sure, fuck it.
Kenny Omega and Adam Page take on two wankers and Tully Blanchard. That'll be really good.
And people will say that it is. Watch that. That should be fun. Kenny Omega versus FTR should be great. And Adam
they
Page
have
is there too.
Credit to AEW, they've put their women's title on the show rather than on YouTube. They have had to go out to NWA to get
a female
wrestler.
I've just seen that. That actually might be quite good. Hikaru Shida versus Thunder Rosa.
I could not give less of a shit about Thunder Rosa. Oh, come on!
Thunder Rosa's okay.
She was good in Lucha Underground.
Yeah, she might be okay now.
She wrestled for NWA.
Wrestled. To be fair, NWA really doesn't exist anymore, let's be honest.
And Hikaru Shida's quite good, though. Yes. So that's nice.
That should be fun. Jesus.
Darby Allin versus Lance Archer versus Brian Cage versus Ricky Starks versus Pentagon Jr. versus Rey Fénix versus The Blade versus Eddie Kingston versus several to-be-announced people as the Casino Battle Royale for a future AEW World Championship match was announced yesterday. Look, Lance Archer and Brian Cage, they've done well.
But look, Eddie Kingston's doing proper things now. He's good.
Yo, yeah, I'm from the Bronx and I'm going to beat you up, and your little boyfriend, even though that sounds really homophobic.
he is good.
We've got an 8-man tag as the Dark Order, made up of the Evil Uno, Stu Grayson, Colt Cabana, and Brody Lee take on Scorpio Sky, Dustin Rhodes, QT Marshall, and Matt Cardona. Mm-hmm. And I ask the question, how the fuck do people watch this over NXT?
the Dark Order have been good recently. They had Brody squash Cody. That was bad.
The winners of Private Party and SoCal Uncensored versus Jurassic Express and the Young Bucks will face each other all out.
Cute.
And then Big Swole versus Britt Baker.
They've been building that for a while, to be fair. I think Britt had her first match back yesterday on Dynamite. But
it's going to go 7 minutes and Britt Baker's going to win. Thunder Rosa. Hikaru Shida will win in 8 minutes. And then we'll be like, they'll be like, we had 15 minutes of women's wrestling. Go us!
And then Britt will beat Hikaru Shida and then we'll actually have a women's champion they like.
And then she'll still not be on TV because they are incapable of doing anything well. Are you looking forward to All Out?
I don't think it's as bigly built up as last year's event, but I think they
bigly
have
built, not as bigly built.
No, I'm not going to correct myself. It's not as bigly built as last year. I'm going to use that for now. Bigly built, but there is some fun matches on there. Omega and Page versus FTR, I'd be quite looking forward to. Moxley and MJF, obviously, because MJF is going to win, and if he doesn't, I will be quite sad. And then the other stuff is fine, I guess.
It's there.
Yeah.
It's on the card. That's
kind of the problem with AEW. You have like one or two good matches, and then the rest you go, sure. But it should be a fun little show. It's always their like big yearly show All Out, so it should be fun. They might have a couple of few debuts in the Casino Battle Royal.
Heath.
I was thinking more EC3.
He's doing Ring of Honor, so probably not.
True. So he is.
Over in Japan, however, the latest news. First of all, Roppongi 3K have vacated the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Titles because Yo is still injured. No plans announced yet what they plan to do with it, but I'd say it's a shame, but we only care about Show anyway.
Ah, he was there sometimes, and Rocky has fucked off, so, yeah.
Well, Rocky has fucked off to America to help with the US stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, he left, he stopped managing Roppongi 3K before all this happened.
Oh, a while ago, yeah.
But he's stuck in the US, doing New Japan US.
Well, over in New Japan US, we have the two-night special Fighting Spirit. Unleashed, featuring September the 11th, Kenta versus Jeff Cobb.
Is that the final of that tournament?
Yes, with the winner getting a shot at, Moxley's US title?
Yep, Moxley's still US champion. Literally has not defended it since Wrestle Kingdom, but fuck it. You know, they strip him because a tornado stopped him going in for a month, but a pandemic, no, you still get to keep the title for 7 months, it's fine.
The week before that, we have Brody King versus Hikulo.
Cool. Hikulo is still a thing. Fun.
Flip Gordon versus Jay White.
That's Flip Gordon doing New Japan US, I didn't know.
And so is a former WWE superstar who is debuting at Fighting Spirit Unleashed. I will give you three guesses.
Oh, fuck. Oh, bro. Is this the person you've built this up as I'm interested in your reaction?
After two, If you don't get it, I'll give you a clue.
Rusev.
No.
Shit. Okay, so someone's shit. Mike Bennett.
No.
Oh.
Former Nexus.
Oh, shit. Michael Tar... What, Heath? No.
Nah, it's Mr. No Days Off, Fred Rosser, oh, really? Formerly known as Darren Young.
Why? I mean, sure, Darren Young's always been fine, but sure. Okay, sure. For fuck's sake. Why?
New Japan is a home to the best pure wrestling, and also Darren Young.
Oh, Darren Young was... The Bob Backlund gimmick was really good. That lasted, like, 3 weeks, but you know...
Make Darren Young great again.
That was so. That was such a good idea, and then Young had to go get fucking injured. Prick.
I read that this morning, and I was like, "That is top tier dreadful."
I think he'll be. Did he not the worst?
Did
choice.
He not give himself some belt to try and get over on the internet?
Yes, I think he did a gimmick Zack Ryder type thing. I can't.
Fred Rosser title. Didn't know that was his name, by the way. I wonder if it will be on... It's not going to be counted on Cage Match, is it?
Nah. I think he only did it in promos and stuff.
Nah, because I think he takes it to meet and greets and stuff like that, right?
Okay, I don't know.
I swear it's something to do with being discriminated against. Block the Hate Championship.
That's it. Oh, yeah, because he does the arm thing now with the block the hate thing. Ah.
Block the... Oh, it's got a rainbow on it. Cool. he's a nice person, and I support what he stands for.
We don't have Michael to fall back on for this. Fuck.
Michael, help! Help! He is your demographic. Speaking of demographic, if you are someone who enjoys proper wrestling journalism, not like TWM and other dodgy news sites...
Did you know we don't call out people here? We don't have any preferences.
Women. Women are my preference. white, blonde women. But, yes, if you're a fan of wrestling journalism in its purest and most accurate form... and enjoy high-quality writing from some of the Mount Rushmore writers of professional wrestling, then you should definitely check out the new Inside the Ropes magazine coming in September. Inside the Ropes, obviously, owned and ran by Kenny McIntosh and a great team of individuals. They have got together some of the best writers in wrestling journalism history, wrestling magazine journalism in particular, such as Bill Apter, James Dixon, you've got Kenny McIntosh in there as well, amongst others, who are all getting together to try and revive the once great industry of wrestling magazines. It's available for £6.50 for the first edition. Yeah, which comes out in mid-September, covering the SummerSlam results. There's an exclusive interview with the Nature Boy Ric Flair in there. Or for £60, you can get a year's subscription that covers everything that they will produce. It's definitely worth a shout, and if you are a fan of wrestling, you will be a fan of this. Disclaimer, we really like Inside the Ropes. So
you did make that sound like a sponsorship, right?
Yeah, it's not a sponsor, but... I have ordered the first edition myself, so I'm not plugging you anything that I haven't already paid for. Now, that wraps up the news and the sponsor. Cash under the table, Kenny. Thank you very much. Takeover. Sure. We did do a takeover post-show special because we did the takeover preview that did really well. Once again, thank you to everyone involved in that.
And also because I slept through both times we planned to do it, but don't worry about that.
Over 400 downloads on the day that went out, so that is fantastic. But before we get in my NXT, it's time to cover NXT TakeOver 30, a paradigm-shifting episode of NXT, if we've ever said that before.
Never said that before.
we kick things off on the pre-show. Breezango won. They are the new number one contenders for the tag team titles. We're not going to talk about the match because we're going to talk about it a lot more when we discover this week's NXT. Instead, we will discuss Finn Balor versus Timothy Thatcher. We'll do this quickfire. Did you enjoy the match? What do you think of the result? Where do you see Thatcher going? Because we know where Balor's going.
The match was, I was quite surprised by this because I thought this would just kind of be like a standard opening NXT match, and it was really, really fun. And there was a particular bit I think where they kept reversing each other's finishers. Like Balor kept going for the 1916, and Thatcher kept reversing it into submissions. That was really, really good. I don't know. It was kind of, we mentioned this in the preview, but both of them kind of need to win this, and I thought Thatcher needed to win a little bit more, but Balor won. And I suppose Thatcher did beat Riddle in the cage like 4 months ago, so he has some amount of credibility, whereas Balor has literally never beaten anyone significant in NXT since coming back. So, I mean, fine, at least he gets a feud. Obviously, we know where Balor's going. Thatcher, I think we might actually see a little bit of where
we get a tease of
where Thatcher's going, which I hope, if they go in the direction I think they're going with it, would be quite interesting. But I feel like Thatcher needs to stay in the more mid-card for now. Just try and build him up. Because obviously he's now lost to Balor. Lost the triple threat match. And I don't think he's really done much, had really many significant wins since beating Riddle. So
Oney Lorcan, that's about it.
Yeah. Which, I mean, Oney Lorcan's there, but like he's not the most significant person in NXT, let's be honest.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. Enjoyed the match. I thought Balor needed the win simply because he had, since he's come back, he's not really had a win other than Damian Priest, and he's Finn Balor.
Yeah.
Luckily, given circumstances that would come out, they did give him the win. And we'll talk about that in a bit. But up next was the ladder match for the vacant NXT North American Championship as Bronson Reed, Cameron Grimes, Johnny Gargano, a paedophile, and Damian Priest attempt to climb the ladder of success and become an NXT North American Championship. Damian Priest picked up the win. I'll kick things off. I thought this match was incredible. First of all, we got to see the literal death of a paedophile. Always a bonus. There was lots of very good character wrestling from Cameron Grimes and Johnny Gargano. Candice getting involved and like actually laying out a lot of the guys and then getting that big spot of comeuppance at the end was fantastic. Bronson Reed, Damian Priest, Cameron Grimes came out of this completely elevated. And as much as Damian Priest wasn't my first choice for who I would have liked to win, that would have been Grimes. The stuff they did immediately afterwards, showing him popping a bottle of champagne, getting into a hot tub of women, and just pouring booze all over himself. Great character work. And we got to see a paedophile die. And we'll talk about paedophiles some more in actual NXT. Ennis, what did you think of this
really
match?
But yeah, this match was really, really good. I don't think it was the level, I think it was just off the level of the original North American title ladder match. The one with Sullivan and Cole and Ricochet.
I like that Lars Sullivan was the person you chose to, not Ricochet.
Listen, he was an integral part of that match. But yeah, there were some really mad spots in this. Like, there was one point Gargano did a like leaping sunset flip powerbomb off one ladder onto another, I think,
to
on
another,
Grimes.
Yeah.
That looked mental. But Priest winning was my like second choice. I would have preferred Grimes, but I'll take Priest. And I think Priest, the few times we've seen him actually bring it is in like profile, big high profile feuds that he's involved with, and the one he's had so far is the Cameron Grimes one. So I feel like putting him as champion might make him constantly go into that high gear that he works better in, but I don't know. I think it's really just a case of testing out with him because he's not the worst choice, I don't think, in that, and the worst outcome in terms of who won.
No, and as we'll talk about later in NXT, his first challenger creates an interesting dynamic. Mm. Then it was time for Pat McAfee to wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
Pat takes on Adam Cole. Adam Cole picks up the win. Right, how do I say this? Pat was NXT level of wrestling.
This was my
favorite. Like, obviously, he's in there with Adam Cole. Mm-hmm. And I think, as much as everyone is talking about how amazing Pat's been, and you got to give him that credit, mm-hmm. this is something he's been doing on the side. He came in as, like, a special attraction, and he put a fucking shift in to get there.
Mm.
It also just shows the caliber of Adam Cole, doesn't it?
Mm.
Like, that he made everything Pat did look crisp. He sold it all. Pat took the Canadian the Panama Sunrise perfectly. But once again, it seems like that's a move that a lot of it's done by Adam Cole.
Mm.
The only real botch in it was an accidental oversell on the backbreaker.
Fine.
But he did a shit ton of athletic stuff, including big dives, big jumps. And I don't think anyone expected the match to be that good. What about you?
This was my favourite match of the night, and I was not expecting that. I really enjoyed this. McAfee was doing mental shit. Like, he was getting up on top rope and did, a standing, ricochet-style moonsault.
Yes, a moonsault backwards,
and he fucking landed it. This was so good. And then he sold the Panama Sunrise perfectly. And even he hit the punt kick on Cole and made me think Pat McAfee was going to beat Adam Cole, which 4 weeks ago I would have laughed if I thought that was going to happen, but was genuinely invested. And this was really, really good. And if they want Pat McAfee to do more stuff, I'd kind of be up for it. As much as me 3 weeks ago would have hated me saying that.
Yes. It was a pleasant surprise. Mm. And I think it really picked the pace of the show up. Because Balor Thatcher had been good.
Yeah.
But once again, it didn't feel like it should have been opening the show. I think the match card of the last few takeovers has had that issue we've discussed each time. This helped recover the pace. Up next, we then went to Io versus Dakota for the Women's Championship, which upped the level again. We got these overlapping stories at the end where Dakota's doing the beatdown. Rhea comes out, and then Raquel and her have the stare down as a throwback to Team R&R, and Rhea's looking like she's going to smack Io, but then just chases them out.
Mm.
Match yourself. Was a really good match, but it wasn't one of those matches that had memorable spots. It was just very well wrestled and with a lot of story underneath, which shows the caliber of those two competitors, that it wasn't about high spots or big moments. It was just a well-wrestled match.
Yeah.
I was surprised that we didn't get a Tegan heel turn, but it looks like, based off NXT, we're actually going full in with the story between her and Candice and the fallout of their friendship. So that might lead to that, or might lead to Candice turning face, or just a match. But it seems like they're getting something there. What do you remember about this match? Thoughts overall?
It was the fairly standard NXT takeover match, which is not a bad thing. But it was really well wrestled, but I don't know if I'll remember much about it. It was fun, and Io kicked out of, I think, both the chiropractor and Gonzalez's pump handle powerbomb thing.
Yeah.
But it was really fun, and then obviously Shirai ended up taking out both Gonzalez and Kai and got the win. And then I feel like this was more of a match to push the angle of TV, because obviously right afterwards Shirai got attacked by Gonzalez, but then Rhea saved her, which is then followed up in this week's episode. So I think that might be part of the problem with it. It doesn't feel like its own match, whereas a lot of takeover matches I feel like should be this is the definitive end, whereas this has a continuation to it, which is fine.
It half had the continuation, but it felt like an evolution of it. So rather than the definitive end, it was we're now adding Rhea into the spot, but we're also, as we'll talk about on NXT, we're starting to build a question of, is Raquel getting too big for Dakota's liking and things like that?
Mm.
But I thought it was a good match. And it was long and full of story. AEW cannot relate. It's the main event. Karrion Kross takes on Keith Lee. The match is a bit meh. Turns out it's because Karrion Kross dislocates his shoulder early on. Karrion Kross wins. We're all very happy. I'm not going to talk about this match. Let's segue this.
I will, because this match was shite. It was bad. Yeah. It was more than meh.
It was boring
as shit. It was not very good at all. And I get, part of it was probably because of the shoulder injury. But it seemed the match they built up was just a very slow match in general, which I don't think fits NXT style.
it didn't need to be 20 minutes, yep. like with the style it was worked.
Yep.
But yeah, it comes out that he has separated his shoulder. Segue this into this week's NXT, where he opens the show. He gets the mic. We're excited that Cross has the mic.
Uh-huh.
He's doing this very well-spoken, really like powerful promo about tying in all of the sort of like the metaphors and the like stories behind him and Scarlett, and like tearing the flesh away from NXT. Keith Lee, who's been called up at this point, is gone, and he said that whoever stood in his way, he would deal with, and he's done that. And then he says the words, "But I'm smart enough to know that with an arm like this, they won't let me defend this title." At which point my heart sunk into my ass, and then I shat it out on the spot and cried it clean again. But because Keith Lee fucked it. I have no idea whose fault it was, that's probably unfair, but yeah, suits the narrative. And Karrion Kross is vacating the NXT World title because he has to go and get shoulder surgery. And it's a long road to recovery. They did it in a really well way where he chooses to vacate it, and he says that it doesn't make a difference when he's back.
Mm.
But it's just, it'll be right back to normal. Yeah. It was good to see
him get
a speak.
He says it's like another obstacle on his path, and he likes being on the path more than he likes the destination, which I thought was really good.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I was scared about when you told me about this. I was worried how they were going to justify this, because Cross, you have to work very carefully if you're going to do this kind of thing. But they did it really well.
They made me watch that promo, and I went, okay, so he's probably, they probably actually still want him as the champ.
Oh, yeah.
They don't
blame him.
They don't want him like out. So the word "separated shoulder" in this Wikipedia thing is hyperlinked. Control F recovery time 6 weeks.
Yeah, the
six to twelve.
It's supposed to be anywhere between 6 to about 3 months. At its worst, 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But after this, we cut to the commentary and we see Wade Barrett on commentary. And one of the points he brings up is that he had the same injury, and he was out. I think 4 months with his. So he can either come back really quick or really slow. To be honest, I don't think this is the worst thing that could happen. Like, it's bad, but it might give a bit of like time for people to chill out a bit in Karrion Kross, because he has been on TV a lot over the last couple of weeks. And I feel like it's kind of better if they pace him a little bit, like they did the first couple of weeks. And I feel like this sort of time will keep him away to keep him fresh for people, so that when he does come back, he's right back in the title picture and he feels fresh.
Well, the thing is, once they know, like, once, like, say he's had whatever he needs done and he's recovered and they have a return date, they can use Scarlett as like a warning to whoever he's returning to, and then
That's the thing. They always have Scarlett as that backup. Scarlett can always still be there. I don't know. I kind of wish. I don't know. That would have been an interesting thing, maybe, if Karrion just fucked off and just they kept Scarlett as the
Scarlett wrestled.
But like Scarlett comes out with the championship that like representing Karrion, and even though he's not there, like. I know they probably wouldn't have done that, because obviously Karrion could be away for the next 6 months or whatever. I feel like that would have been a really interesting thing they could have done, where Karrion's not there, he doesn't wrestle for like a couple of months, maybe a month or two, and Scarlett just comes out as his like representative. I think that would have been quite interesting, but obviously that's not happening, so ignore the fantasy booking.
Yeah. We cut to our next match, which is the NXT Tag Team Championship match, as the champions Imperium take on the number one contenders Breezango. Obviously won that three-way triple threat tag match at TakeOver. Back and forth match, lots of high impact moves. Breezango, no outfits, they're here and they're serious. Main spot I remember is a lot of really nice like European uppercuts out of nowhere by Bartel. A nice money shot in midair by Breeze.
Beauty shot.
We get to the end of the match. beauty shot, money shot or something. Was completely different. That's probably a Shane McMahon finisher.
Actually. I don't think it's a wrestling thing. Money shot is something very different.
Wrestling.
No, I don't think it is.
Please. No, I don't. Val Venus. Of course, okay. Val Venus.
Fuck. Oh,
which is because it's a porn thing.
Yeah, so you're still stuck in this hole.
But finish comes, supermodel kick, the last dance.
Yes, that's the leg drop.
To both members of Imperium, and Breezango pick up the win to win their first ever titles as a team or as individuals. I have the tweet here from Tyler Breeze. 3,023 days since his first NXT match as Mike Dalton. 882 days since he wrestled that first match. 1,569 days of being a tag team with Fandango.
Christ.
And they finally won them. Michael always isn't on when something good happens to Breezango.
It's Michael Breezango's jinx. In the 2-day podcast, he's been gone.
No, it's Michael Breezango.
It's Mike. Look, in the 2 podcasts, he's been gone. Michael, they have won the number one contenderships and won the titles. I feel like Michael should just stay away if he wants Breezango to do well. I feel like that's what's going to happen now.
I wonder what's more important, the left-right title or the NXT Tag Championships.
Left-right title?
Yeah, he has a...
Oh, up, down. That's...
No, they have...
Oh, left, I don't keep right, up with left, up,
right,
down.
Title.
Got you, right.
Oh, neither do I, I'm on his Twitter.
And there's dogs.
There's Meg, big Breezango fan. But yeah, they finally win. I'm interested to see where they go with this because their sole focus is... When their sole focus is wrestling, they are incredible. When their sole focus is entertainment, they're hilariously entertaining. They just... Sometimes they start to show one and it falls into the other and it can be difficult to follow. I still stand by that I feel like this is going to lead to a heel turn. I'm a guy who seems to always think heel turns are coming that aren't, as seen by Tegan Nox at TakeOver. But I just feel like with Legado del Fantasma on the rise, Legado del Fantasma will probably beat them because they don't want to have them beat Imperium because that's heel. And then it'll be Breeze who takes the pin to lose their first ever titles pretty quickly, and Fandango will be so pissed off because Fandango got the win that he will turn on Breeze, because I just don't see this lasting a while. Are you excited to see what they're going to do with Breezango? Would you have preferred it kept on Imperium? I feel like we both kind of didn't give a shit about Imperium.
Yeah, the problem with Imperium is that as much as Eichner and Barthel are good, they are massively stifled by Walter and Wolf not being there.
Stop saying "and Wolf." What? No one gives a fuck if Wolf is there.
No, but they need the full Imperium. They need all of them. It's like Undisputed Era without one of them. But
you mean like when Kyle O'Reilly was away?
Wait, it didn't make a difference. Yeah, okay, no, fair, but shush. Go with the point. So, Imperium needed the titles off of them because they've literally been on TV twice since winning them, and I feel like Breezango are probably going to be transitional champions, similar to what you said. I imagine Legado del Fantasma will probably beat them for it, as it's hinted later, as we'll see. But yeah, I don't imagine Breezango are keeping them long, and maybe we might get a heel turn out of it, but I'm not sure yet.
Yeah. Well, up next is another interesting moment as Jake Atlas comes to the ring and they're talking. I'm like, oh, okay, this will be good. You know, he might have a chance, get a competitive match. And then it's Ciampa that comes out and I immediately know he's fucked. But we hear Ciampa's banging theme and I'm like, okay, yeah, no, when Ciampa was announced as coming back. And then we see the hoodie, and then we see the mask, and then we see the unkempt beard, and we know what's coming. And he comes to the ring, and he's more aggressive than usual, and I'm like, okay, this is nice. Then he beats Atlas, even better. then he just keeps attacking Atlas, and I'm like, okay, so he snapped, this is good, but, you know, it's a bit... Then he fucking murders Jake Atlas. Like, we're talking repeated blows, unprotected shots to the back of the head, he's throwing him into the plexiglass, he's smacking him about the place, then he pulls him in and hits him with the Willow DDT? Something like that. The Vintage Orton. And then from there, Atlas starts to get taken away. He gets stretchered. You know, we're properly selling this. And then he does the Vintage Orton off the stretcher, and Atlas sells it like he
death,
like he actually dies. And Ciampa sits up on the fucking, what'd you call it, like the apron, and just looks at him and kind of, you see a little bit of like, oh fuck, here we go again, in his eyes. But yes. Big evil daddy Ciampa is here. And Jake Atlas is dead?
I think so. Yeah. I think they're taking it. I don't think he's going to be back for a while. He looked dead. Well,
weirdly, the Forbes article I'm using to keep an eye on the running order says that this felt like an angle to write off Jake Atlas forever and he will rue the day he took all his talent to the WWE.
No.
They seem to be pretty high on...
Yeah, no, I don't think he's Atlas, like, away forever. I think he'll be away for a few weeks, but not forever.
Maybe repackage him, or like return him as something more than just a man that they like to tease that he is LGBT without actually being LGBT.
Yeah.
What do you think of the heel turn, the way it was executed? Are you excited for heel Ciampa now that Cross is not here?
Oh, like, I forgot how great heel Ciampa is. Like, as much as, like, face Ciampa is good and he's great and all, heel Ciampa is just on another level. And I feel like that 2 month break has just done him so much good in making him feel fresh. Like, and we've not had heel Ciampa in, what, a year or so? Year and a half? When did he turn face? I can't remember.
He was face when he had the title.
Yeah.
And then he looked...
Oh, yeah, because he came back. Yeah, because Cole... Yeah, because he got injured as a heel, came back as a face, and then this is his first time turning heel since. So, yeah, it's been like nearly a year and a half that he's not been heel, and I think he needed this. As much as, like, face champ is good and all, it's kind of... He strives more as a heel, and he thrives when he's a heel. So I think... And judging, obviously, where he goes from here... as we'll see later on, I think he's got some very interesting things coming down the line.
Yes, especially with the announcement that we'll get to a bit later. Let me just check this. Do we have any news, or not news, or any promo segments at this point?
Yes, just before this, actually, we did have a promo from Damian Priest. He gets interviewed by, I think, Sarah Scriber, I can't remember, and she basically asks, you know, what's his plans with the North American title, and I think then, oh god, Timothy Thatcher then comes up to him, and says, you know, I should be first in line, for some reason, despite the fact he's lost.
He talks about the fact that he would treat that champion. He would treat that belt like a championship rather than a fashion accessory. And
because Priest basically, is drinking stuff.
Priest is walking around with a bottle, drinking. Priest's like, ah, you know, I'll fight you, but I'm partying just now. And
And then he ends it by saying, "It looks to me like I'm fairly well equipped," and then points to his crotch, which I don't know if it's a dick joke or a championship joke, but
I think it's a bit of it's like, look, I'm the champ, but also penis. Yeah. But I, as has been the thing that I've been asking for with any combination of different characters, I would not be against, right? Mm-hmm. Them having a series of matches, because it feels like we must be getting close to the Dusty Classic time.
I don't know if they're going to do it this year, because they're limited. Damian
Priest and Timothy Thatcher as a mismatched tag team were like... Thatcher makes Damian Priest do actual wrestling training and is like quite surprised that he can do actual training. And then Damian Priest makes Thatcher go on a night out and they're in a limo and he's like, did you bring your own booze? Because it's BYOB, did you bring your B? And Thatcher goes, yes, you asked me to, so, and then he whips out, like, milk, or, like, protein shake, or fucking cow's blood, yeah. And he's like, what's that, and he's like, I'm gonna get the gains, oh, it's not happening, no, it's like iPad Regal, but it means that this feud could go somewhere, and also, I just think it'd be interesting to see, like, the sort of mesh of styles.
Mm.
I also feel like Thatcher will probably win.
Oh, really? What, beat Priest?
Yeah.
Wow. Uh-huh. I don't think so.
Also, Cameron Grimes and Priest could be good for the Dusty Tag Classic.
Mm, that's the more likely combination I was thinking of. Because they've had that prior history.
Yeah, exactly. Following on from...
We do get a promo from Candace and a promo from Bronson.
Yes, the Tegan Candace thing, right? So, it cuts to Candace talking about how, yes, her and Tegan used to be friends, and when they were over in the UK, Tegan took her to a castle in Wales.
That was her favourite thing.
And that's a good way to make me a friend.
Really, they also
just wait till she comes to Edinburgh.
I noticed.
Really? Mm-hmm.
If you, in the bottom left, they show footage on each of them in a promotion. It's in the bottom left says Fight Club Pro, which I thought was an interesting little note, because I don't think Fight Club Pro have worked with WWE before.
Well, I suppose
Trent does own it.
Trent, isn't it?
Yeah, because I think it's entirely owned by Trent now, because Martin Zaki's gone. Yeah. So, I suppose that makes sense.
I mean, they both got cancelled, so fuck those.
Bro.
But yeah, and it's about how she still considers her a friend, but if she's not going to do things the Gargano way, then maybe she'll need to teach her a lesson and remind her why she's always been better. I thought it was a good promo.
Yeah. She also ends it by saying c'est la vie, which is, best reference.
Yes.
It's literally a joke that, like, 10% of the audience will get.
Indie smart.
And
yeah,
us.
Yeah.
But that's it. I'm happy with that.
Does it go from that
right into the Bronson
into the
yeah,
match?
They do a lot of weird things. So they go promo and then match rather than match promo, promo match promo. But yeah,
I remember the Bronson Reed. I remember him getting. Oh yes, that's who it is.
I was waiting for you.
So Bronson Reed's talking about the fact that he didn't win, but you know he thought he came out feeling confident, he's seen Thatcher saying that he should be next, but it should be him. And then there's an unfamiliar but familiar face comes on screen, and it takes me a second. I go, "Oh, that's Austin Theory." Mm-hmm. And then my brain goes, "But he's a paedophile, allegedly."
Yeah.
How did we get rid of one paedophile from the North American title? We went from at least a bite, like, I mean, at least in means like in terms of in the minimum, not in terms of at least he's. We went from at least a bisexual paedophile to a heterosexual, possibly bisexual paedophile. Why?
I'll say the same thing I said with Velveteen Dream. Surely they must have done enough checks to go, yeah, no, this is fine. But at the same
There's
time...
There's been screenshots for both
know,
of them.
I know, which is why I don't know really where to stand on this.
Because I'm quite excited about Austin Theory back in NXT. Like, he's very athletic. The promo was pretty good. You know, he talked about the fact that... you're talking about the fact that at 28 you nearly climbed the ladder to win the Universal title. Well, I made it to WrestleMania at 23, so maybe you can do that by the time you're 40.
Why didn't Bronson Reed climb the ladder to win the Universal title? That'd be interesting.
It's on Payback this Sunday. But it was a nice little, very Legend Killer Orton style. It's just, as well as being athletic, like, very gifted, very ripped, he does unfortunately touch kids. You know, in terms of priorities, not being a paedophile is much more of an important trait to having abs.
I kind of feel like it's... I don't know. I don't know.
Take some heat off Dream. Now we have two paedophiles to be angry at throughout.
Good. We can split the anger. It's fine.
North American title match. Velveteen Dream, Austin Theory, and the referee, a 5-year-old child.
Nicholas. Bring Nicholas in.
Yeah. Except they're not competing for the title, they're competing for the title.
I realise, seeing Brian Nicholson, fuck it, is probably not the best choice of words in that context. There you go, there's your episode title, Brian Nicholson,
Velveteen Dream. Velveteen Dream versus Austin Theory in a custody of Dominic match. Except rather than Eddie and Ray wanting to raise the child, they want to fuck the child.
Jesus, this is worse than the man.
This is just becoming the paedophile podcast.
Oh god.
We're nonce hunters. That's what we've become.
Let's move on to nicer things.
Yes, let's move on to two people unlikely to be paedophiles. It's Mia Yim versus Shotzi Blackheart.
Oh god.
The way this match takes place is that it's meant to be Mia Yim versus Mercedes Martinez. Yes. But Mia Yim comes out. They talk about the fact that she can focus on her own career now that Keith has moved up. You know, pretty reflective of how the booking viewed her. But then, our boy, the only man that should replace Karrion Kross as champion, Robert Stone, comes out and basically says, "Do you think I'm stupid? Do you think I'm going to let Mercedes compete after what Rhea did to her?" Basically, like, she's not... That's too high risk. We're not going to let that happen. And then he gets run over by a tank from behind. And it's done. At first I was like, oh god, they're going to do it again. But they did it like out of nowhere. Yeah. And he's selling it. And it's nice. And then like he's fully under it this time. And then Shotzi just gets in. And now she goes, I'll wrestle you. So we get Mia versus Shotzi. No, this article is wrong. I swear that's not the result. I'm just gonna go with what I think happened. So the two have a back and forth match, pretty respectful, other than one point where they go for a handshake and then Mia does like a throat punch. Mm. One spot I remember is so Shotzi does the leg drop where she shouts "Welcome to the ball pit," and then leg drops in where the balls would be, and Mia's like, "No, don't do it, no, don't." Every time I talk about Mia, yeah, my dog gets very excited because she hears her name. Her name's Mia, not Yim. And then I'm fairly sure Shotzi picks up the win with the senton.
She does. What does the article say?
Forbes says Mia Yim defeats Shotzi Blackheart.
She doesn't.
And I was like, Mia Yim doesn't win.
No, she does not. Shotzi beats her because they make a big deal about how Shotzi's beaten someone who's been so big in the women's division. So, yeah.
Mia Yim's probably turning heel, right? If Tegan's not or something, like... Or she needs to do something.
See, I don't know. I feel like this is more a thing to elevate Shotzi. Because I feel like...
Oh, yeah. Shotzi's on the
way. I don't know if this is going to be... I don't think they're going to do anything for Mia for a while because they're already doing the thing with Candice and Tegan. I feel like this is more so, I think, like, build up Shotzi to potentially a TV title shot because I have an idea for a next TakeOver women's title shot if they don't do Shotzi. So... I think it's probably I imagine Shotzi versus Io coming soon, and then another potential match which I may or may not happen that I think might happen.
See, it's interesting because we've got a lot of these stories where it feels like they're leading to heel turns, right? So or like they could, so like the whole Tegan thing with Candice could lead to one. Yeah. The whole Raquel and Rhea thing could lead to one. Mia Yim constantly losing and looking frustrated could lead to one. But the three of them and Shotzi are the only faces on the NXT Women's Division. Like, it's a very and Io, who's the champ.
Yeah.
It's a very heel stacked division. Sure. And like, what I like is that all of the women's stories are interlinking but are also separate. Yeah. It's like, it's very well written.
Yeah.
But we'll come back to that later on. Up next, William Regal's music hits, and it's William Regal versus Cameron Grimes in a no DQ match. William Regal is here in person to announce the plan for the vacant title. He puts over Cross and basically says, takes a hell of a man to do what he did, and he's done exactly what he said he'd do, and we look forward to you coming back. And then he announces that the four pillar stones of All Japan have been resurrected from the dead. No, they are here and they are going to be competing next Tuesday on NXT Super Tuesday, yeah, as Finn Balor, Tommaso Ciampa, mm-hmm, Adam Cole, and Johnny Gargano compete for the NXT title,
mm-hmm,
in a 4-way 60-minute Iron Man, mm-hmm, match.
I'm curious to see your reaction.
What? So, someone on the community had predicted that they would do this match. I wasn't sure, like, if they maybe put some of the people from the North American match into it. I knew they wouldn't do a tournament, because they've had to do two very recently, the Cruiserweight and then this one. I kept thinking Kevin Owens.
See, I don't know. You are because stuck on that Kevin Owens thing. I don't know.
Kevin Owens has said he wants to go back.
Everyone says they
want
to go back to NXT.
Them.
They all don't like main roster. I don't blame them.
Well, sorry. His is like, he keeps pitching it to them, like, let me go back. But also, when they pulled up the screen, there was space left for one more person after the four.
Yeah.
Like, the way they positioned
it
the graphics.
Yeah.
And I keep coming back to this idea that next week, that's going to be the big shock. But also, they want ratings, so they would have just announced them before.
Yeah.
And then they said the 60-minute Iron Man match, and I was like, oh, I don't like Iron Man matches, because it's a bit mute. But I thought about it, and the fact that it's a 4-way Iron Man match actually deals with my main issue of an Iron Man match.
Exactly the same.
Which is, the time limit, it actually matters now. It's not a case of, oh, it's going to be 1-1 or 2-1. It could be fucking 1-1, 1-1, 3-1, and then Johnny Gargano gets a roll-up.
Yep.
My one issue is, from a kayfabe point of view, Ciampa should be suspended. Like, he did just murder one of your competitors. And William Regal's like, I appreciate that he is one of the most aggressive wrestlers we've ever had.
This is the same William Regal who gave Samoa Joe multiple title shots after he threatened him multiple times, so it doesn't really surprise me.
And also the same William Regal that was a heel for most of his career, to be fair.
I have more of a problem with Balor winning, because he's only won two fucking matches. He's won over Damian Priest and the other two over Tim Thatcher. He hasn't beaten anyone significant in months.
I know, but that's two out of two wins.
He is a former champion.
Well, I think that's what they've done here, right? Like, it's the four former champions that are currently on it.
Yeah.
It's mental, right? But do you not think it would be really nice or really sensible to say that we've got these four members and we're going to be getting in touch with a former champion to fill out it and make it a 5-man? And you can tease it being different people. You can tease it being Sami Zayn. I mean, Sam, it would have been fucking lovely if it's Sami Zayn, but it's not. So you tease it.
Well, you never know. Kyle's back this episode, so maybe.
You tease it being Sami. You tease it being Kevin. Fuck it. Give Bo Dallas something to do. Have Bo Dallas turn up at William Regal's office and be like, is it me? And him be like, no.
Do like an Impact thing where they like flash up something
exactly.
To Neville and shit. Just do stupid
and
shit
wait
like that.
Until it's a week where you're competing with AEW again. And earlier in that day, on social media, announced that it's going to be Balor, Ciampa, Cole, Gargano, and Seth Rollins. Seth obviously isn't winning. You can have Seth like finish second and then get rolled up last minute.
Yeah,
but Seth Rollins in an NXT title match,
true,
is one fucking hell of a draw. And
yeah, to be and the that one time he appeared in that takeover,
it felt special.
Triple H, yeah,
and it would suit him being heel as well. I'm the Monday Night Messiah, and I'm fucking disgraced by what NXT's become. I'm here to cleanse you all.
I hope he says it exactly like that. He just swears.
What the fuck is this shit? Yous are losing to Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks.
So why is that not somebody's character? Just
wait, it's basically Finn Balor, isn't it? You bunch of marks.
But Finn calls out people calling people marks. You should just have him just go, fuck it.
Why
just have him go up a slideshow of this ratings and going, this is what you're losing to?
They don't have women. We have women.
Oh, fucking hell.
Are you excited to see the Iron Man match, and who do you think is winning?
Mm. See, I have the similar problem to you with Iron Man matches, but I think after a while they get very boring and yeah. samey. I say this as a person who likes long New Japan main events, but shush, it's fine. but yeah, my issue with Iron Man matches I think will be solved by the fact this is a four-way, because, you know, you don't have to keep them all in the ring at the same time. You can keep the roll-ups fresh, who's getting pinned fresh, and you can lead to loads of different weird ties. Like, they could even do a tie where it's like 1-1-2-2, and then it's only down to two last people. Oh, like, they could yeah. do, for example, Gargano and Ciampa get two, so then they come down to Gargano and Ciampa. Well, which I think yeah, could be an interesting thing.
We have a lot of stories overlapping here because
exactly,
Ciampa and Gargano are now both heel again.
Yes.
And obviously their rivalry is storied. Finn Balor failed to beat Adam Cole before, but also him and Gargano had that feud. Like, my pick.
Right.
Ciampa.
Ooh,
never lost
okay.
the belt.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
And has just had, like, the only beatdown that it reminds me of is Undertaker against Maven in the Rumble.
Yeah.
And it just feels like they'll do that.
It's time again.
And when Cross comes back, well, why would Cross be Ciampa the number one contender? Well, because he fucking is the reason that Ciampa is this way.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to do here. There's a lot of stories.
Yeah,
I'm excited. You sounded surprised by Ciampa. Who have you got? And please don't say
Adam
Cole.
I was expecting you to. No. Anyone yeah. but Adam Cole. No, Ciampa is
literally anyone.
Literally anyone else.
Pat McAfee.
My main prediction is Ciampa also, but I have a weird like out of left field prediction.
Balor. Yeah, I am the same.
Because I don't think Gargano. I think Gargano's the third least likely. Because he's got other stuff he can do. But Balor, I think, would be interesting. Because it would actually put him in his position of a main spot where he'd be like, right, you have to actually do shit now. Are you actually good? Or are you, like...
Because
I think the Prince character could work really well as a champion. It's just they've done fuck all with him.
It's interesting as well is that technically Balor and Cole are the faces in this match. Because Cole was turned face to an extent during the Pat match.
See, it's weird. Because Cole is face, but Undisputed are kind of
yeah,
like
they be,
we'll get into it later.
But then also, Balor's turned face during the feud with Volter, but still acts pretty heelish. Like, there's no definitive face in here. But see now that you said double tie, it's going to be a fucking double tie.
And it's gonna be Gargano Ciampa, and they're gonna do
and
it
it's gonna go to overtime.
Fuck you!
Mm-hmm. Oh, imagine.
And it's literally gonna take an hour and a half of the show. We're only gonna get that other street fight, and that's gonna be the whole show.
It's Super Tuesday. But up next, it's what I expected to be the main event, and it's still.
Hang on, Super Tuesday. Yes. Why are you doing NXT on a Tuesday?
I think the NHL playoffs are on the Wednesday. So for a similar reason to why AEW had to move.
To AEW. Got you. Right, okay. I was wondering for a second there.
But...
Yeah. Okay. Oh, no. Poor impact. The ratings. Oh, no. What's
going to
happen?
The real ratings war. Impact versus NXT.
Oh, no. Wrestle House is going to destroy it.
Oh, no. Sorry. This is actually NXT testing the waters for their second show. NXT Dark.
NXT Light.
NXT, but we put women's matches on YouTube now. It's Santos Escobar versus Isaiah Swerve Scott. This felt like it should have been the main event based off pre-build, but it's not. Mm. I was really hyped for this match. It was okay.
Okay.
It had some really nice stuff in it, but this felt like it should have been the end of this little feud, with Escobar definitively retaining, but Swerve looking really strong. And instead, we got a really nice finish that I do enjoy, because it's proper old-school Lucha Libre heel. But commentary didn't put over very well, which up until this point, Wade Barrett had been very good. I've got to say, he talked a lot about like his experience with each of these competitors, which I liked. There was one point where he talked about wrestling someone in Singapore.
Ciampa? Who was it? No, it was... Oh, piss, who was it? I think, was it not Finn?
Yes, it was. It was Finn. The Prince,
yeah, because he talked about how he caved in his... Yeah, because he linked that in how the people he'll be struggled with the most in ring was charisma.
Yes.
Because he couldn't adapt to their, like, high-flying style.
And what I liked is he wasn't definitively healer face. It was kind of like, would his character like this person? So, like, he liked a lot of the faces.
Similar way to how Corey does.
Yeah.
It's a colour commentator, but it's more of a character-based colour commentator rather than just being pure.
Because he didn't like Shotzi. Because she was weird. He was just kept talking about the tank. Because if it was your first time working somewhere and someone got run over by a tank, there's a line where he goes...
You'd be a bit concerned.
Like, excuse me, Beth, but this man's just been run over a tank. And she goes, yeah, it's kind of a weekly occurrence at this point. I assume Beth is still from home for health/travel reasons?
I assume travel, because I think her and Ed live in Toronto. They live in Toronto, so I don't think... I think Canada and US still have a weird... it's the same reason why Bobby Roode can't go to...
What a loss!
I think Canada and US still have weird travel rules, so I don't think... I think they'll just keep her at home for just ease.
So, the finish comes when Phantasma's on the outside, and he puts on a loaded mask and headbutts... Mm-hmm. Swerve, knocking him out and getting the pin. Big fan.
I've never seen anything like this. I'm not that familiar with the stuff. I have never seen anything
school.
Like this. That was great.
Like, old school heel work of someone who's demasked. Because one, it's sin in Lucha Libre to remask after you have taken your mask off.
Yeah.
Also to wear a mask that wasn't his. It's a shame it was like generic as fuck. If it had been like a sombre mask, last song.
one of Dominic's masks that he's just
the
doing.
Hood. It's nice.
He does a really good job of hiding the mask during and before the pin. He hides it behind. If you watch the replay, you can see him hiding it from the ref's view as the ref moves. Really, really nice.
And then he gets a win. The other members of Legado del Fantasma come out throughout and try to get involved, but Breezango fight them off, which means that next week on Super Tuesday we're getting a six-man street fight. That's the word that I was like, basically no DQ match. Which will obviously, I assume, lead to one of Breezango getting pinned, which sets up a title match, and then Legado del Fantasma will probably win. What did you think of the match, the finish, and the fact that this feud is still going?
The match itself was pretty fun. It was a standard cruiserweight match. Again, the finish, as I mentioned, was really, really inventive and something I haven't seen pretty much ever before. I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like that, using the mask and loading something into it. That was really, really nice. I do kind of feel like this should have been either in the higher spot or the end of the feud, because like it does feel a little bit like it's dragging now, and I hope the street fight next week is kind of the conclusion of at least the Swerve Escobar bit, and then we can get Legado del Fantasma beating Breezango, hopefully, for the titles. But we'll see. There is two promos after this, in case you don't have it in your
notes. You can tell us what they are, because I don't.
Sure, lovely. Gargano does a promo about the Fatal 4-Way... Iron Man match, and basically just he works the botch in from last week into the promo.
Yes.
And he mentions how last week, you know, I'm the Iron Man of NXT, you know, last week I nearly broke my neck putting on a show for you people, and how he was like the face of NXT and how he was gonna win the title, which was quite nice. And I really love them working the botch into it and acknowledging it, because they never would do that on main roster. Never.
Yeah. Is this a promo where he talks about really it's nice. Funny how time, or is that the Bather one that's where he talks about it's funny how things change in such a short period of time that he lost the match. Yeah, I think it was Bather up next, right? Talks about not qualifying, not winning the ladder match because he wasn't in it, and now he's in the main event for the title.
And Bather also talks about how something like how the people from the marketing department to Jimmy or something trolling on the internet, yes, giving them what they really want, which is him winning the title, which I thought was really... I love Balor's like whole referencing marks
you
and
know
stuff. It's
how
great.
Sad I am that I was getting ready before NXT for Cross to come out, big killer promo, Prince Balor to come out, them to have a match, Cross to kill him, Balor to disappear for a few weeks, Cross to be like, who's next in my path, the Demon to come out, and us to do the Demon returning at TakeOver against Cross, and Cross to... Cross would be the first person to beat the Demon?
No, the Demon has been beaten. Samoa Joe. Not on main roster,
yes,
but he has been beaten in NXT.
So, for the first time in a while, and Cross to beat the Demon and retire the Demon. But it to feel like this way. But no, he had to go and hurt his shoulder. So instead, that's the other alternative, is we have Finn win it now, and Cross comes back to do that feud, because in 4 months' time, we're building to Mania. Well, we're building to the Rumble and then to Mania, so he becomes the number one contender in January, Rumble weekend, and that match happens at Mania.
I want to give you an idea that might just make you very happy.
What's that?
4 months away is January.
He just wins the Rumble.
Karrion Kross enters the Royal Rumble. Not wins it,
no,
but just
Keith
is in the Rumble.
Is Universal Championship going into Mania. Is Universal Champion going into Mania. Kross wins the Rumble, and we get Kross, his return match after getting injured by Keith Lee, is to beat Keith Lee at Mania. That's what's happening.
Yeah. But then that would involve Kelly being on the
main
roster.
Yeah,
which
I really don't want.
Which, no.
How quickly would they do him
versus
the Fiend? About 5 seconds?
Maybe about a week or two, I think. They'd maybe make a pay-per-view.
The horror show at Extreme Rules.
They would as well. Oh,
but,
God.
Yep, it's time for our main event. No?
Nope.
Oh shit! Yes.
Match before that.
Kyle O'Reilly comes to the ring because on social media, which you have to follow to get half NXT storylines nowadays, Drake Maverick challenged any member of the Undisputed Era to a match, following the fact that they just jumped him and Killian Dane during their match and the build up to Pat McAfee versus Cole. It's a Kyle O'Reilly match.
Yep.
Perfect. Want more?
I think it's the first Kyle O'Reilly match since the lockdown, because I did, because
he
went away
shooter,
because obviously
But Undisputed Era are still heel.
Yeah, see, they do this really weird thing. So O'Reilly and Maverick have a really really good match.
O'Reilly taps him out.
Wins? I can't actually remember. No, O'Reilly taps him out, so he does. You're right. With a heel hook. And then afterwards, Roderick and Fish start beating
Kyle
up Maverick, but Kyle says no.
Yes, please.
He doesn't want to beat
him
up.
Yes, please. Kyle O'Reilly breakout year.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Something else I quite liked on commentary is they brought up Wade being part of the Nexus and asked him, as like a former faction leader, what he thinks about Undisputed Era. Really
did you see, on just to link
but,
back to the Nexus here, Wade Barrett tweeted, like, thank you for having me back, I'll be there next week. Because at the end of the show, after seeing that this was just a one-off, he goes, oh, you think I'm going to miss out on Super Tuesday after that main event announcement? I'll be here again next week. And then Bray Wyatt on Twitter responded, good, are you here for the Nexus reunion as well? And he put only if I can be leader as well. Only if I can be leader again. And then Bray responded, I'm fine with
excellent,
it, but I know someone who might have an issue with it. And then did like the Hulk Hogan thing, but put TF, as in the Fiend. Here's a question. How many weeks until Wade Barrett is in a match? I'm retired from wrestling, but I'll come back to do commentary. Bollocks. Bollocks, bollocks, bollocks.
I think he is going to just stay on commentary, because he's been doing commentary with NWA.
I was
going to
say, I didn't know he did it for NWA, but I'm pretty sure What Culture... But What Culture brought him in to do commentary for that show, and he got physical with Zach Gibson.
Yeah. True. And then he became GM. Because he was... Barrett was NWA's main colour commentator for Power.
Wait, so does that mean he was on air when Jim Cornette talked about taking chicken through Africa?
Yep. Yes. Yes, he was. Yes. Yes, he was. We don't want to talk
about Ethiopia in particular.
But, Barrett was the colour commentator for NWA, so he does have commentary experience. If they do want him to wrestle, I think it won't be until about maybe Survivor Series or TakeOver. But, I mean, this was... It's interesting where they're going in the direction of this match, because it wasn't... They didn't entirely point it out and make it obvious that Kyle didn't want to beat him up. But they point it out in social media, and it's not one of the things I specifically noticed is that as soon as Killian Dane runs down, Kyle bolts at the ring. Doesn't even...
The other two stand their ground.
Roderick and Fish stay to attack. Kyle then comes up on the ropes. Kane goes for him again. Dane goes for him again. And Kyle just jumps down. He doesn't hit Dane once, which I thought was very interesting. They are teasing Descent and UE for the first time, which I think is quite an interesting direction to go. Especially considering Cole is weird face heel mix.
In my head, if you're calling them up, you call them all up, right? But what I would be okay with is before Cole goes up, because Cole will go up, Cole can go up with Strong and Fish, because they've been tagging together for a while Kyle's been away. Mm-hmm. Remember New Japan Wrestle Kingdom 11? Do you remember the Ring of Honor title match on that show?
Yes, I do. Adam Cole versus Kyle O'Reilly.
You could do it non-title. But if Cole was to, say, win the title, Kyle O'Reilly could get built between now and then as a single star who turned face against the Undisputed Era. The time he was away, he got tired of their bullshit and the fact that he always had to play second fiddle to Cole.
Yes. Despite the fact he did the whole therapy thing, like a month ago.
We do that match in Wrestle Kingdom, but rather than Cole beating O'Reilly for his record third Ring of Honor title, or it might have been the second at the time.
Yes.
Yeah, because he has a record with three, but I can't remember if that was the second or third.
Yes.
O'Reilly beats Cole. It doesn't matter, you can do it for the title, I don't think they'll put the title on Cole, because people would just be like, again. But I think O'Reilly beating Cole and the other two of Undisputed Era then going up, and O'Reilly staying in NXT as a singles star, fresh off the back of a Cole victory. I'm all for that, because Kyle O'Reilly's so fucking good.
I'm just kind of all for Undisputed Era kind of splitting up in general, because I think all the... They are, but I think all of them as single people are.
Do you remember Roderick Strong?
The problem with Undisputed Era is it has that Bullet Club sin.
This is my wife and kids. I am basically Kushida.
I liked Roderick Strong as a face. He was fine. He had that nice suit with Bobby Roode, that last Roode's last match. No one remembers, but I do. Leo is currently doing sick motions. That's to give you the full experience. I think the problem with Bullet Club, the problem with Undisputed Era, I mentioned this before, they had the Bullet Club syndrome where, despite everyone being really talented and really good in the group, they all get stifled into just being Undisputed Era henchmen. I'm kind of sick of that. I want to see... Like, we got that when... do you remember when Kyle and Bobby Fish debuted? They both had singles matches before debuting with Cole. A couple of weeks before TakeOver.
No, because they debuted on TakeOver as well.
Nope, they both
they attacked
against
Alistair
Black.
Yeah, they debuted as a team at TakeOver.
They had proper matches. Yeah, they had proper matches before TakeOver. But then they properly debuted. So we'd have had a taste of Kyle and Bobby as like singles people. But I feel like we've been with Undisputed Era so long, I kind of want them to at least, maybe don't break them up, but like split them off and let them do their own single stuff. Because are interesting.
I look at it in terms of WWE like merch money, Undisputed Era merch money. I think you can get away, however, with breaking Kyle O'Reilly off, because in terms of the four of them, Cole is the complete package and the one that's most over. He needs to go up. Debuting him with the Undisputed Era is easier. So you take Roderick, and Bobby Fish with it, because I don't think they see Bobby Fish as a reliable singles guy because of the injury. And Roderick Strong is,
which is fair.
Bland outside of the Undisputed Era. He just is. Even as Messiah the Backbreaker, cool, you can do... You can,
I like him. I guess mostly to do with my liking of him in Ring of Honor.
So you take them up so that Cole can still do the same shtick. But then you let Kyle do his single sing in NXT, because he is... He's got the sort of the character work to do it. Like, we know that he's a good talker and a good actor. He's sympathetic as a babyface. And he's actually the best wrestler in the Undisputed Era. In terms of, like, in-ring, yeah.
Really?
100%. Cole does flashier moves, but Kyle O'Reilly is a, like, Puro technical wrestler is unrivaled.
True. I think it's more so because I haven't seen Kyle wrestle.
And then,
solo in ages.
When the Undisputed Era are in a feud where they're outnumbered, you can call them up and rejoin them there if they need them to. I'd be all for a Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle O'Reilly, Adam Cole is the Undisputed Era breakup feud. It feels like that.
Fair.
Put the North American... Kyle O'Reilly versus Timothy Thatcher for the North American title. There's a beautiful technical wrestling match that...
See, my only thing that would make me thingy with that is they usually have Fish and O'Reilly as the tag team, because obviously Red Dragon, but they haven't referenced
and
that
COVID
in so long.
Allowed
so
the
I
other,
think you could get
COVID's
away with
made
it.
The other two to teams, so... It's interesting, and it made this match slightly more interesting. The fallout, Killian Dane saves Maverick. Maverick says thank you, Kane. Then just Dane then just hits Maverick. Annoyingly,
can
this means that we're going to have Dane versus Undisputed Era, one of the members of Undisputed Era next week, probably Roderick Strong, because Bobby Fish doesn't get singles matches. And then Maverick versus Dane. And can Dane just fuck off?
I thought they were going to do something interesting, but they were going to have him like be kind of
have him and Maverick as like a
team with them. See, I thought they were going to do next week like him and Maverick versus I don't know, Fish and Roderick. But no, we just got boring, fucking boring. Killian Dane being heel.
I thought you could do a fun thing where like Maverick's a high flying. Inverted commas, risk taker. You know, more. What's it they kept saying about him? More guts and more guts and gall than brain. You know, we'll pick on any fight, even if you shouldn't. And then he has Killian Dane with him, and you know, you could do something with that. And hell, it's a tag team; they need them.
Yeah.
But no, Dane is still the same boring cunt.
He's
and
just boring.
We
shit.
Know how well strong henchmen or henchwomen can work, because in our main event we have Dakota Kai and her personality Raquel Gonzalez taking on the team of Io Shirai and Rhea Ripley. Dakota Kai has a promo thing before where she basically says, we will win because we are a tag team unit, and Io and Rhea are not, because Rhea wants Io's belt as well, so they have that issue. And I was like, yeah, that's sensible, well played.
They really should use that logic more, because I that's my one problem with tag team wrestling. I hate put together teams doing better than teams that have been together for years. WWE's guilty of this all the fucking time.
Are you familiar with the Dusty Classic?
Yes, I know. I hate it. That's the reason I hate the Broserweights. As much as they were entertaining, I fucking hate them beating established tag teams.
Matches pretty good. Lots of sort of big high spots. Good tag team wrestling from Dakota and Raquel. And Rhea kind of like... They're not like having issues with each other, but they're not communicating well. And at one point, like, Io just tagged herself in, and Rhea's like, really? Like, what? And then Rhea comes back in, regains control, Io tags in. It's not too blatantly like miscommunicating, but like it's going all right. But then Mercedes comes out and she pulls Rhea down, smacks her off the ring steps and goes away. So, like, we acknowledge that thing, and also Robert Stonebrand being like, it's not a case of Mercedes wasn't fit to wrestle. It's actually, he wants her in a bigger match, and this gets them a bigger match and a bigger payday higher up the card, which I like. Rhea recovers from it, which is good, so it doesn't show her to be too weak. But then Raquel pins Rhea Ripley.
Yeah.
Which makes perfect sense.
Which is... I think this could lead to a very interesting women's title. I mentioned earlier about how I think Shotzi's probably going to be a TV feud.
I think we might have an actually quite similar out there idea. The Shotzi thing, yeah, they could do. I think they're going to do an interview next week. Dakota will be like, we just beat the champion again. We're the number one contender. Or I'm the number one contender. I beat Io Shirai last week. Were you not watching? And then the commentator or the interviewer will go, well, actually, Raquel got the win. So, Raquel, do you think that you should be in line for a title shot? And Raquel will go to say, like, yes or whatever. And Dakota will be like, we're a team. Everything we do is together. And I can see them doing something along the lines of Rhea, Dakota, Raquel, and Io in a four-way match for the title.
Mine's is similar, but I have Mercedes.
Oh, yeah, you could put Mercedes in there. Well, you could have Mercedes beat Rhea to get in it, and then have Rhea added.
Because I think having
big
the three...
Io. Oh, that'd be a lovely dynamic.
Io,
yeah.
Rather than... I think that would be a slightly better match. Well, but I'd be up for Dakota again.
The reason I had
Dakota... I feel like...
Liam loves a turn. Liam loves a double turn.
No!
And halfway through the match, where Dakota's... Because Raquel would be wrestling, whatever, dominating... But then Dakota would be like, no, you're here to help me win. And then halfway through the match, when like all four competitors are all stood up, you'd have like Io taking all the beating in the corner, Dakota sort of laughing maniacally beside her, Rhea who's taken a bit more abuse, and Raquel who's been very dominant. And Raquel looks at Rhea, looks at Dakota, nods at Rhea, and then they beat the shit out of Dakota Kai. One of them wins, and Team R&R are the big heel. And Dakota doesn't need to go face, but she is not the big evil heel now. Yeah, she's an empathetic heel to this bigger evil. And Team R&R become the force to be reckoned with in NXT, because Raquel Gonzalez has been the most interesting part of the women's division, and Io Shirai needs a way to lose the title to elevate someone else, because we've had so many long women's title drain in NXT other than Charlotte. But you've then got Mercedes. Like, there's the women's division stacked.
Yeah. They're very good at multi-layering all the the feuds and stuff. And I'd be interested in the R&R thing, but my problem with that is they haven't mentioned that Rhea and Raquel have timed at all. They haven't, and they usually don't when it comes to like stuff that's only exclusively house shows. Granted, they did it all the way, I think, until earlier this year.
Yeah.
They had them teaming still. But it's if they'd mentioned it maybe once or twice, then maybe, but I don't feasibly see it. Unless they're doing it as like a swerve and then they mention it after that point. But that would be interesting if they did go that direction. But I think we're both agreed, at least, that the next sort of big feud for Io is probably going to be a Fatal 4-Way, somewhat including Raquel, Dakota, Rhea, or
and
Mercedes.
The thing is, if they were to do a takeover right now, which I think we'll get a break between the while, we'll have a break between them for a while, you can easily put together Rhea versus Mercedes, Candice versus Tegan, and then, like, Raquel Gonzalez versus Io Shirai with Dakota at ringside. And then you could also include, like, Shotzi in a big match. Like, they can easily put together three main event, three pay-per-view worthy women's stories right now.
Yeah.
AEW's got Big Swole and Little Swole. Cardboard Box Swole.
They've got one good feud.
It's not really a feud, is it?
They've been building it for a while. That's good for the AEW.
Oh, that's good for the AEW. But
that's a reference no one else is gonna get. But fuck it.
That wraps up another week of NXT. We have Payback on Sunday. It's I'm gonna Google this. I assume it's
I've had the card up if you'd like.
I know of one match, I think.
Sure, we have Bobby Lashley versus Apollo Crews for the US title. Who gives a fuck?
Why?
Because they had an arm wrestling match and Bobby Lashley.
Bobby Lashley
to
shouldn't need to cheat.
That's genuinely
have you seen his arms? Oh my god, I have just
better
seen
for some reason. Yeah. So we also have Keith Lee versus Randy Orton, which should be fine. Bailey and Sasha.
They were feuding like 2 days ago. How were they a team?
Because on Raw,
like I saw it coming.
They decided that Bailey and Sasha was the bigger threat. And then we have the Beastly Resistance, or however the fuck you say it, I don't know. The Fiend Bray Wyatt versus Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman in a triple threat for the Universal title.
Oh, Estos
Oh my god, I didn't even think about that. I mean, I assume Roman is
Roman
winning,
wins,
but,
with like Retribution debuting.
No, Estos of it catches
Roman Reigns debuts, right? And he's but they do it like, he teases heel throughout. Like, it's a mix of tease and he's just being very focused on his goal. And then he's clever. He tells Ostozovic, come out and face me. Do it like a man. So Otis does, and they're having a competitive match. When the lights come out, Retribution debuts, beating down Otis, Roman pins, and then just smiles with Retribution still masked behind them. And Roman Reigns uses Retribution to get Ostozovic's cashing out the way.
I like how the way that Roman debuts Retribution is not to beat down the Fiend of Braun Strowman. It's to beat down the might of Otis Stozovic.
Can I remind you of the people that Otis Stozovic beat for that title?
Well,
yeah,
two of them died.
Otis Stozovic literally murdered
King Corbin
people.
Died.
Like Otis Stozovic beat AJ Styles, Daniel Ryan, Rey Mysterio, King Corbin, and Aleister Black. So Roman Reigns should be scared. Him and Corbin have a storied rivalry.
I need to go back and watch that Money in the Bank match. That was good.
That's
the literal moment I was thinking of.
Including intros and outros, we finally hit a two-hour podcast. So, plug your
good
shit.
Usually I plug my Twitter, but I don't tweet really much anymore. I was gonna do a gimmick thing where I like point out a Reddit thing that I like, but I haven't prepared this. So Twitter, my Twitter is at @ns_mcvey, @ns_mcvey. I sometimes retweet stuff. There was my latest retweet is the Pikachu and the Thunderdome, and it's quite cute.
You can follow me on Twitter at @liamaster. I'm currently replaying all the Pokemon games, so I'm tweeting about that and football and occasionally wrestling. You can follow me on Instagram at Millie McVee. That's with 3 Y's at the end. Don't ask why that's my app. It just is.
don't look up that app, please.
Other than that, this has been the Developmental Podcast, and you can follow us on Twitter at Develop Podcast. Same on Instagram. We don't use it too much, but you know, maybe if we had more followers, we would. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to this, and. Once again, make sure to check out the ITR magazine coming soon. It's going to be very exciting. And Retrona will be back once Michael returns from gonorrhea, which should be next week. So he should be back for next week's, which will be the Roundtable 20? 21, this is 20.
21, this is 20.
I have been on 36 consecutive podcasts, so I'm going to take a break at some point.
I have been on 17?
Yeah.
This is a streak for me. In fact, including Retrona, it'll be something like 18 or 19.
But other than that, thank you very much for listening. And if you would now place your hand over your right hand shoulder, over your heart, as we listen to, I think it's called Unentitled. Basically, how could this happen to me? How made my mistakes? Killer Crosses.
We don't even play it anymore. There you go. You've done it.
How could this happen to me? Thank you very much for listening. And as always, please remember, be good people.